alive! Alive!
Welcome to Now Playing Podcast's bonus review of The Munsters.
Don't you dare touch that dial!
Hosted by Stuart.
I knew the moment I laid eyes on you that you were special.
Arnie.
What do you know? He's a zombie!
And Brock.
Boy, what a fun group!
This podcast is spoiler-filled and contains harsh language. Listener discretion is advised.
I can't believe what I'm hearing.
We hope you enjoy the show.
Come on, we have a lot of grave robbing ahead of us this evening.
Today we're talking about The Munsters, starring Jeff Daniel Phillips, Sherry Moon Zombie, Daniel Roebuck, Richard Brake, Sylvester McCoy, directed by Rob Zombie.
Of course it is. You said Sherry Moon Zombie's in it. I mean, nobody else is casting her.
I can't believe they got Sherry Moon Zombie. How'd they get her? Directed by Rob Zombie. This is Brock, co-host of Now Playing.
And Stuart.
And this is the Now Playing co-host who, when they made me, they broke the mold, Arnie.
Hello, October patrons. You know, normally we've been in the habit of like presenting movies that you guys have requested. This month we have a movie that nobody wanted at all. Who the hell thought Rob Zombie and the Munsters went together? Like, even the whole idea sounds like a pitch meeting from hell.
Well, Rob Zombie thought it went together. He's been working on this for over 20 years.
Wait, what?
What?
Rob Zombie wanted to do this? This isn't the humiliation of I got nothing else?
Rob Zombie loves the Munsters. One of his biggest hits, Dragula, if you've ever seen the video, Dragula is the name of the dragster that Herman and Grandpa had in The Munsters. So that entire song is an homage to The Munsters. There's footage from The Munsters show or recreations of it in the Dragula video. Rob Zombie grew up watching these shows. He's a bit older than us. When listening to him drone on in his commentary, he talks about watching Leave It to Beaver and The Munsters and The Addams Family as a kid, and The Munsters was his thing. You can almost see it in his entire style that his semi-Wolfman persona might be seen as Eddie Munster grown up and gone goth. I mean, he, before House of a Thousand Corpses, was thinking he'd like to do The Munsters. And House of a Thousand Corpses, let's remember, that was a Universal picture. And the people at Universal were saying to him, hey, this is going great. What do you want to do after this? And he said to Universal back then, I'd like to do The Munsters. And then Universal saw House of a Thousand Corpses and said, we're not releasing this trash. This is a horrible thing for Universal, and we don't want to work with you anymore.
Okay, so I get it. I get it. Rob Zombie grew up with this and thought it was cute, and it's a childhood fantasy to bring it to screens in 2022. But why would Universal change their mind that he makes trash?
Right, because my thing is that his current persona, his known persona, is nothing like the Munsters. So if you think Rob Zombie and the Munsters, you're going to think a Rob Zombie version of the Munsters. Oh, but good God, why would we want to see that? And yet, oh, maybe I want to see that. But why would they even agree to do that?
Well, they took several meetings with him, basically because his producer also worked on stuff for Universal. And his producer was working on, apparently, around the time Rob Zombie was working on 31, Universal was going to do a direct-to-video kids movie all about Eddie Munster. And Rob Zombie's like, oh, the Munsters are available? Get me that meeting. Get me that meeting. And he pitched the idea back then of doing an origin story. They hired him. And then he found out that it had moved from the theatrical division of Universal to the TV division, and somebody was going to make a TV show out of it. And it's not Mockingbird Lane. We're going to talk about Mockingbird Lane. They were going to do a different TV show of it. And so they took it away from him. And then while he was doing Three from Hell not all that long ago, his producer called back and said The Munsters is available again. And Rob Zombie's like, all right, well, I've already pitched my shit, so if they want to talk to me, let them talk to me. And they came, and I don't know what low rent expectations they had, because they obviously didn't throw a ton of money at this, but they said, Rob, go to Romania, make your film.
Yeah, I do want to clarify something here. You're talking about Universal Pictures. They have a division, 1440. This is not Universal. This is Universal 1440. They're the ones that make the sequels to things you forgot you saw 25 years ago. You've been still like holding on for that Hard Target Dragonheart or Backdraft sequel. They just released it straight to streaming. They're the ones, we talked about them on the Tremors show, because they're the ones that kept putting out Tremors 6, 7, whatever, Scorpion King movies. The reason why we haven't covered The Mummy yet is because they made like 8 Scorpion King movies.
God damn them.
So yes, it's a trash division, so I guess a trash division can work with Rob Zombie.
So their expectation of this was not to go theatrical. Their expectation was to go to direct to streaming, direct to video.
It has to be. I mean, Zombie never spoke directly to that, but Rob Zombie hasn't had a theatrical film in a very long time, a standard theatrical release. He's had Fathom Events, but I think the last of his films to hit theaters proper was Halloween 2, wasn't it?
Lord of Salem, I saw it in theaters. It was a real small release, but yes, I agree. The last mainstream, people are aware of the movie, people are aware of him. Yeah, that would have been 2009.
And they made this on the cheap. They allowed him to cast whoever he wanted to cast. You see that I always equate Rob Zombie to like a theater troupe. He's got a roster of players that just keep coming back and he signs the same people again and again. And much like Kevin Smith, who operates in the same vein, used to be theatrical, now direct to video and Fathom Eventi and hiring the same people again and again, and not always to that director's advantage that he does this.
Christopher Guest does the same thing, but Christopher Guest has a very talented troupe of improv folks. It's the subject matter that makes the Christopher Guest movie work better than anything else.
Yeah, Christopher Guest has talented people. Rob Zombie has Sherry.
So this wasn't going to theaters, but I do remember hearing it was going to go to Peacock, which actually does have the library of the Munsters' original 1964-66 sitcom run. And then all of a sudden, like a month ago, they're like, nee, never mind. Peacock's too good for this.
Yeah.
We're going to give it to Netflix because they'll release anything.
I have a feeling that came down to economics. I'm guessing Netflix offered to write a check that covered production. Mm. And they're like, we could have an instant break even.
Mm-hmm.
Or we can have this thing that would provide no subscriber bonus. So it's not really going to punch up our bottom line with Peacock, and we could just have a nice break even, or maybe even a small profit.
Right.
But you still have to wonder why Netflix would cut a check for that. My only guess is that they have a quota of how much original content they want per month, and therefore they put it out there. Because believe it or not, as of this recording, it is in their top 10 of things that are being watched this week, which really surprised me. I thought I would have to search really hard for this on there. No, it's right there. Like, it's not in the top 5, but it's definitely in the top 10. And good for them that they are actually getting eyeballs on this thing. So perhaps Netflix did make a good enough investment.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Netflix, I mean, I think they release 5 new projects a week. They have this amazing output. They're very prolific in that sense. So yeah, more content, any content, we'll take it. We'll do it. And I think that's why a lot of their stuff just gets lost in the cracks. But there is love, some love. You know, we've been talking about the Addams Family. Part of the reason why we chose to do this as the October patron pick is that it complements the Addams Family series that we're currently unveiling over at Silver Level. I was a Munsters guy. I just want to put it out there. I never watched the Addams Family. If I was going to pick, Fred Gwynne and his clan were my go-to.
Yeah, we totally could have done a Munsters retrospective series instead of the Addams Family. We could have made it at least 6 parts looking at the various Munsters movies that have been made over the years. Unlike the Addams Family, which was a TV show in the 60s, and then really kind of went away until it came back in the 90s, other than, like we talked about, the Scooby-Doo episodes.
That Halloween special.
Right. Right.
I already blocked that from my mind.
Good idea.
But the Munsters have never really gone away. Every single decade, there's been a Munsters reunion or a Munsters revival or a Munsters reboot. And I agree with you, Stuart. I was a Munsters guy way more than an Addams Family guy. I think when I was a kid, a very young kid, I got the Munsters. It's a funny Frankenstein and a funny vampire and a funny werewolf kid. And I really latched onto that. I think the Addams Family was a little too wry, maybe a little too subtle for a very young child sensibilities. I got that they were ooky and kooky, but they weren't as fun as a klutzy Frankenstein. And so I always liked the Munsters more. And if you look back at that original cast, how can you just not celebrate Fred Gwynn, who just created a wonderful character in Herman Munster? I believe he is the primary reason why the Munsters have endured. Although I do remember back when Schwarzenegger was elected governor of California, Al Lewis was running a Grandpa for Governor campaign.
Yeah, Al Lewis pushed this grandfather thing in comedy clubs. He was always an ever-present as Grandpa Munster, let's be very clear. Kind of like Cassandra Peterson, who we'll talk about in a minute, was always Elvira. He was always in his grandpa persona. And I, too, watch more Munsters than Addams Family, but I think it's because it was on more than the Addams Family for the kids. Like, it was with Brady Bunch and older shows that really skewed younger. And as Arnie said, it's more accessible for someone like me at that age in reruns to watch because Addams Family just didn't click as well. So good for the Munsters. You know, when I was watching My Cousin Vinny, I couldn't stop thinking Herman Munster the entire time and he was on the bench as the judge.
That's funny because I never really knew it was him until I was older. And so when I watched Pet Sematary and My Cousin Vinny, all I thought of was Pet Sematary during My Cousin Vinny. I didn't put together the Herman Munster stuff until after that, when I got to revisit the Munsters as a young adult and syndication. It got to Nick at Night at that point. The creators of the Munsters admit readily they were ripping off Charles Addams cartoons. They read those cartoons in the New Yorker, and they thought this would make a funny TV show, and they ended up making it from the producers of Leave It to Beaver. So you were able to parody that kind of sitcom perfect family with the mirror image of these monsters. And I think everybody thinks of the Munsters and has that picture in their head of Fred Gwynn as Frankenstein and Eddie Munster with the werewolf, but it was going to be all original monsters, kind of like the Addams Family. They were going to create their new ones. And then one of the developers is like, hey, we're working at Universal. They actually decided these are the Universal Monsters. This isn't a Frankenstein. This is the Frankenstein. And this isn't a vampire. This is Count Dracula as Grandpa. And they were able to use all of that Universal Pictures iconography and then create this lighthearted parody that isn't, I think, all that far off from the Abbott and Costello stuff they did with the Monsters.
I seem to remember there was an episode where the creature from the Black Lagoon actually showed up.
Uncle Gil.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So I didn't make that up. All right. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the one thing is we're really touching on our first Universal Monsters MASH property here, because that's kind of what they were envisioning and able to just mine for that. And it's worth pointing out, the Munsters were the more popular. Mm. They trounced the Addams Family in the ratings. They were a huge success. Munsters were CBS, Addams Family were ABC. ABC got their revenge. They put Batman on exactly opposite the Munsters in 65-66, and Batman was such a huge rating success, that's why the Munsters came to an end, as their ratings were just depleted by the Batman. But this was the more popular show of its day.
Yeah, and I went back to look, a side-by-side comparison, and I think it is something you can appreciate with a young mind, but maybe not holds up as a comedy classic. Fred Gwynn is good. I think he is the show, and maybe Al Lewis, if you like that old vaudeville kind of shtick. They have kind of what John Astin and Uncle Fester have on the Addams Family. They have a good rapport that can kind of keep these flimsy show concepts alive. But the pilot was not great. It was all hinging on the fact they have this niece, Marilyn, who's as pretty as Marilyn Monroe. But to a monster family, she's abjectly horrible looking. And, you know, she's dating a boy and, you know, shenanigans. It wasn't hilarious.
And that was a recurring gag in the series, is she kept wondering why she couldn't get a boy. And the boy was always frightened off when he'd see the family. And I watched about half of season one. I probably have seen every episode in my lifetime, but to prepare for this, I did a dive into season one. There's a lot of episodes. I forget that back in the 60s, first of all, a season of television could have like 38 episodes, and then they'd be about 27 minutes apiece. Could you imagine only having 3 minutes of commercials in a 30-minute show? But that's what it was, so there was a lot of content out there. But I rewatched it, and I can't say that I had many laughs out of it, but I had goodwill towards it, is what I'll say, is I thought the show was affable, and I really kind of liked its vibe, you know? Plus, I enjoyed the retro 60s slang of being hip and all of that, and the surfer culture stuff that would work its way in.
Yeah, I liked it enough to go watch the reunion movies. That cast, even though it only made it two seasons on TV, did make two films. One was theatrical right after the show got canned. They made a color movie called Munster Go Home. I watched that one, and then in the 80s, early 80s, they had kind of a reunion movie called Munster's Revenge, all set in a wax museum.
I actually watched Munster Go Home also because I wanted to familiarize myself again with the Munsters and the characters. And I'm really happy I did because it gave me exactly what I wanted to go back and revisit. And I looked it up. It was made as a movie because they were going to syndicate or try to syndicate the Munsters and put it out in Europe. So they did this as kind of an introduction to all the characters. And in that aspect, I think it works great. I really enjoyed watching that movie and returning to it, getting the same kind of vibes you guys are talking about. And maybe I laughed out loud once at one gag, but the rest of it is you have an appreciation for these guys and what they're doing. And the concept is clear and the plots are clear. And it's just well-composed movie for doing what they need to do. So yeah, it was an easy watch to watch Munster Go Home.
I agree. I'd never seen that one before. I'd heard the title many, many times. I took this as an opportunity to watch it. It would be a recommend from me in, again, that affable way. And it did what TV movies should do, which is if you're taking them out of the small screen, putting them on the big screen, you need to do something big with them. It took them out of Mockingbird Lane and put them into England and got them outdoors for some shots and really sort of felt like it expanded the scope, whereas most of the Munsters episodes took place in that house. They didn't leave the house all that much. And so it did bring most of the original cast together and gave each of them something to do, including that niece Marilyn, who would again have the problem of thinking she's hideous because she's not looking like her monster family and thinking that the boy doesn't like her when in fact the boy is just shocked by seeing her parents and things like that. So yeah, that was a lot of fun. Munster's Revenge, 15 years later, it was okay. You didn't get the whole family back. You got the key players though. Like you said, Al Lewis wasn't going to let go of Grandpa. And
No.
This was more of a crime caper where, and this felt like a Batman 66 plot. Criminals were using a wax museum as a front. The wax statues were robots that were going to be used to mug people throughout the city. And wouldn't you know it, some of those statues are the Universal Monsters that look exactly like the Universal Munsters.
Okay.
Yeah, the TV movie's not that funny. I did laugh at Munster Go Home. There's a gag where Al Lewis turns into a wolf and Yvonne DiCarlo wears him as a mink stole and yeah, starts snapping at people. That was legit funny. There's nothing really funny in the TV movie, but I can say it's better than the Addams Family Halloween TV movie. If you were going to have a reunion 15 years later, Munsters did it better.
There seem to be a lot of cases in the Munsters movies of confused identity, and you're going to be arrested, and then you're going to break out of prison, and you have to prove yourself innocent. That was a recurring motif in a lot of the Munsters stuff I watched. And just the Munsters dealing with crime, for some reason, seemed to be a thing that they would do in these movies. I mean, it was in Munster Go Home, they were breaking up a counterfeiting ring. And then in between Munster Go Home and the Munsters' Revenge, there was an animated TV special called The Little Munsters. And I watched that. It reminded me a lot of Rocky and Bullwinkle, Which is funny because the creators of Rocky and Bullwinkle originally pitched the Munsters as an animated series.
Yeah, going cartoon route seems right because kids are going to love Munsters the most. I don't remember that one. I did watch the Addams Family cartoon and it didn't work. Are they little like they're tiny, like they're Ant-Man, or are they little just like they're children?
Like Flintstone kids.
Neither. They were just kind of stumpy, like Sherman from the time travel cartoon. But it had the strangest plot. Grandpa accidentally developed a clean burning engine that would run on music instead of gasoline, and it removed all the smog from California and cleaned the air, and the oil and automobile corporations were very upset by this. And so, like, the mafia, this guy doing a
oh boy.
This is so 70s. I love it. We should have covered this. I'm going to go watch this.
You got this guy doing a Marlon Brando voice, and he's the head of the gas corporations trying to stop the Munsters from making clean energy. So
okay.
Yeah. They're trying to fuse whatever was popular in the early 70s for an animated special. It wasn't a cartoon then. It wasn't a series.
No, it felt like it should have been, but it just turned out to be a 1-hour TV special. We probably would have debated if we covered it since it only ran like 40 some minutes after commercials were removed.
Yeah, it just seems like the Munsters kept trying to come back. Like, every decade, they'd come up with something, but I didn't connect with much of it.
I remember in the 80s, I couldn't find this to rewatch, but I was big into syndicated shows in the late 80s. I mean, from Small Wonder to Swamp Thing to Out of This World to She's the Sheriff.
Out of This World.
I was watching all of these things. And
it's a very dark period for me, but yes, I watched them all too.
Yeah, I watched a lot of that.
I was just staying home, had no friends, watching those horrible, horrible shows.
Remember Jerry O'Connell in My Secret Identity? The superhero who used spray paint to fly? But they did come out with the Munsters Today. And the concept for that is the Munsters from the 60s went into hibernation and they woke up and it was the 80s. So it was supposed to be the exact same Munsters, a continuation, but they did have an entirely new cast by this point. You know, several of them.
Even Al Lewis?
Yeah, even Al Lewis got replaced. They had Lee Merriweather as Lily Munster. She was the most notable name in the cast.
Who was in the Batman show that destroyed the Munsters originally. I remember that show so well because what they did with the theme song, it ends with dun 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 is the end of the theme song. And they put it in, it's the Munsters Today. And they put in Today at the end, right? So every single time, and I mean every single time I hear that song, at the end, I sing, it's the Munsters Today in my head, regardless if it's that version or the original version. To this moment, I'd still do it.
I remember it being like the original show. It was affable. I didn't love it when it was on, but I enjoyed the fish out of water comedy of seeing these people in the modern tech era of the 80s and dealing with that. It went for 3 years. I think I probably only watched it one of the 3 years. That was the time they also brought back a Leave It to Beaver show, if you remember. Like, it was Beaver as an adult.
Yeah, the new Leave It to Beaver. It was still the Beaver on Disney Channel, and they moved it over to syndication and called it the new Leave It to Beaver. Jerry Mathers and Tony Dow and Barbara Billingsley were in it. Mm. I watched that too.
So it was all a kind of thing. Then in the 90s, they tried to bring the Munsters back. John Landis was behind it. You know, American Werewolf in London, John Landis, Trading Places, John Landis.
Criminally negligent director of Twilight Zone.
Which is why he was doing that in the 90s, yes.
And they did Here Comes the Munsters. Now, this was a complete reboot and an origin story for the Munsters. It starts off with them as a family living in Transylvania. They're being chased out by townspeople, that old trope of what happens to monsters in Transylvania. You got the people with the pitchforks and the torches. And so they have to move to America where they have relatives. They have that niece. And it goes into a little bit of detail, like, who are the niece's parents and what has happened to them and why do they own such a creepy house? And it turns out that her father is Mr. Hyde, who has accidentally created a formula that turns him into Dr. Jekyll, a far right-wing politician who wants the Munsters and all other immigrants to be deported.
Of course. Is Dr. Jekyll a Democrat and Mr. Hyde a conservative Republican?
I believe so, yes.
There you go. All right, there you go.
You've got an interesting cast. I got to say, if you don't have Fred Gwynne, the perfect Herman Munster is Edward Herman, who, if you don't know that name, the primary thing I know him from is The Lost Boys, where he's the father vampire.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He has the right build.
Yeah.
And he was able to create his own Herman Munster performance while still bringing some of that Fred Gwynne, everything that made that character sparkle. He just had the effervescence and everything he needed to be Herman Munster. And then a fun little thing, you know, Christine Taylor, she was Marsha Brady in the Brady Bunch movies, married Ben Stiller.
Sure.
She was Marilyn in that TV movie.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's fun. Was she good?
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, I could visualize her as that broad. That's a good idea. I know Edward Herman, maybe some other listeners do, from Gilmore Girls. He was the grandfather. He's a character actor, been working forever. He's one of those guys. So, yeah, that sounds perfectly. You know what, Arnie, I got to be honest with you. Once you mentioned his name, I kind of wish I watched that. Maybe I will go back and check that out because I actually like him a lot.
I'd give that one a recommend, too. What I wouldn't recommend is what they did the very next year, still John Landis produced, but I'm thinking their budget was cut because they brought nobody back from the cast of the original one.
Mm.
And it was The Munsters' Scary Little Christmas. Now, while this is better than the Addams Family Halloween special, it is a completely kiddified Munsters, mostly, where it's Eddie Munster is being bullied and therefore has lost the Christmas spirit. And Santa Claus is going to be kidnapped by Grandpa to help bring the Christmas spirit back to Eddie Munster. The funny thing is, Ed Gale, Howard the Duck Ed Gale, is in the movie playing one of Santa's elves, and he and another elf are these horny little dudes who want to look at nude women and keep talking about going to clubs and getting laid. And so they want to stop Santa on Christmas so they can go have a debaucherous evening.
In a Christmas movie for kids.
Where was this released? This is a TV movie?
Yeah.
For kids? Okay. All right.
All right. Well, I mean, you know, it just sounds like it should have been released in the 80s. That's like by the mid-90s, we had different sensibilities about kids' entertainment. And maybe the Munsters. I don't remember any of that. I do remember at some point, and I saw it, but I'll be damned if I can remember a single thing about it. Bryan Singer, director of Usual Suspects and the X-Men, got involved with this very expensive reboot show.
Oh, this was tremendous. Honestly, of all the things I've watched of the Munsters in my deep dive, my very favorite thing is the TV pilot Mockingbird Lane. It was made in 2012 for NBC, and the real brain behind it was Brian Fuller.
Oh, yeah. He's good.
Who did the Hannibal show, who did that show Pushing Daisies that I love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like his work.
Bryan Singer did direct and was involved, but this was like a Brian Fuller-led project. It had a totally new take on the Munsters. And if you've watched some of Brian Fuller's stuff, you may know the comedic yet dark tone it's going to take.
Mm-hmm.
It has Jerry O'Connell as Herman Munster, right?
Mm.
But he's not wearing the full makeup. He's just flesh-colored with a lot of scars. But if he takes off his shirt, there's like a zipper so you can get at all his organs and replace his hearts and things like that. He's a complete Frankenstein. You've got Portia de Rossi as Lily Munster, just supposed to be this sex pot that everybody falls in love with. The best casting was Eddie Izzard as Grandpa.
Yes, I remember that.
Oh, he was so fun. And they just moved to a new town, and he's like, I'm going to start drinking again, meaning feeding on people. And the plot of the pilot episode is Eddie Munster turned into a werewolf. He didn't know he was a werewolf. He was out at a Boy Scout camp, turned into a werewolf, clawed up a bunch of kids, didn't kill anybody, but wounded and maimed. And so they had to move to a different town and break the news to Eddie, oh, you're a werewolf. And Eddie didn't want to be a werewolf because he didn't want to kill people. And it turned out to be a semi-gory show. I mean, you do see Herman's internal organs, and they do kill the new scout leader and rip out his heart, and Grandpa feeds on his blood. I mean, they go humorously dark with it, and man, I remember this airing and thinking, lame, monsters, who cares? It was great. It is truthfully, you can find this pilot out there. Go watch this pilot. You're going to wish it was picked up to series like I was.
I did see it just because, again, the hype, not because I was a Munsters fan, just because there was this hype about, it was really expensive, as I recall. That was ultimately why it didn't get greenlit, was the production values were really high. I remember it looking really good,
mm-hmm.
as all Brian Fuller shows do.
A lot better than this Rob Zombie thing.
Yeah, we're going to talk about aesthetics in a minute. But yeah, you just couldn't sustain that week after week. So I don't think it failed because it was a bad idea. It just wasn't something that network TV could put on in 2012. So 10 years later, yes, the project has now been reinvented. Rob Zombie finally gets his wish. Let's get into it, Arnie. Let's find out what Rob Zombie wanted to do all these years. Give us a plot.
Sherry Moon Zombie is Lily, a 150-year-old vampire looking to finally settle down and start a family, but none of the local Transylvania men make her blood run cold. That changes when on television she sees the newly reanimated Frankenstein monster, Herman Munster, played by Jeff Daniel Phillips. It's love at first sight for them both, though Lily's father, the Count, played by Daniel Roebuck, doesn't approve of the 9-foot-tall buffoon built with the brain of a failed stand-up comedian. Still, against the Count's wishes, Lily and Herman get married, but it's not long before Lily's werewolf brother Lester takes advantage of Herman's good nature. Lester tricks Herman into signing over the deed of the Count's Transylvanian mansion. With no place to live, the three Munsters decide to move to Los Angeles. There they find the perfect rundown mansion on Mockingbird Lane, and Herman gets a job as an undertaker. The three Munsters are prepared to live happily ever after as credits roll.
Yeah, this is an origin story. I gotta say, that was a surprise that came to me very late in this picture, that what Rob Zombie is actually trying to do is explain the origins of all of the iconography so that we can then go straight into the Fred Gwynne sitcom.
I came to you late in that? You didn't realize that when she was dating that she didn't know Herman yet?
I didn't know that they were going to connect it to the sitcom. Like, it literally, These are supposed to be those Munsters and not a reinvented conception of them.
Now I understand. Okay, yeah. My thing, Stuart, there was, this is taking place in the 60s, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't pick that up until very late, because the end of the movie, when they have like people in their outfits, they're all looking like 50s and 60s bobby Soxers and kids and women with poodle skirts, which was actually 50s, not 60s. They had a couple of like Ward Cleaver kind of guys. And I was like, wait a minute, this is supposed to be the 60s, because during the course of the movie, they had certain jokes that were like modern kind of jokes, but all the aesthetics make it look like it's the 60s. So it's really strange.
He wanted this movie to be in black and white. And Universal was no. So that's why we get the technicolored thing we do, is he decided to swing the pendulum 180 in the other direction. But a lot of his ideas were neutered coming into this by Universal.
It does look a lot like Munster Go Home, the 66 movie. I mean, the color, the fact that all the main characters have that sort of green-blue pallor to their face and all of that. That was the solution that they had for taking the black and white show and making it a movie experience. I buy that. But again, it just didn't occur to me. Yeah, I can clearly see that this is an origin story for how Lily and Herman meet. But I guess you couldn't ever presume that these people are Fred Gwynne and Yvonne DiCarlo.
I found Jeff Daniel Phillips played him more like a moron, like an idiot.
Yes.
Whereas Fred Gwynne had like more of an affable denseness to him, but he wasn't completely dumb. There were moments like a Herman Munster could be like Homer Simpson sometimes, right? But he's not a complete idiot. And I'm talking earlier Homer Simpson, not current Homer Simpson, for all you Simpson purists out there.
Absolutely. Fred Flintstone, the Honeymooners, Ralph Cramden kind of buffoon, but not a moron, addled idiot which is how it is here. And we get that because we're starting off with Richard Brake, who's Dr. Henry Augustus Wolfgang, and Jorge Garcia, who I haven't seen work since Lost. I don't know what happened to him.
Yeah.
But he's not Igor, but a hunchback named Floop. And they're going around gathering parts for their assembled zombie monster.
And this is why you realize that Zombie, however perfect he might feel he is for this fit, is not well suited for a sitcom. His jokes are, yeah, the hunchback saying, he's a real sack of crap. Like, that's the joke. Like, vulgarity, crap, and sight gags that are ill-timed, and scenes that just go on forever. Comedy's about timing. You know, let's be clear. Mm-hmm. You got to be quick. You got to be fast. You got to be willing for people to miss jokes because you can't wait to tell them the next joke. And this movie dawdles. It takes forever, it feels like, for Herman Munster to be assembled.
I agree. And he also, I mean, I'm going to call it out. He recycled jokes from Young Frankenstein with the brain switching.
Well, that's actually from Frankenstein. Universal's Frankenstein had the brain switching.
Even if they did have that original movie, Arnie, the way they played it here is definitely more like Mel Brooks.
And that's a 50-year-old comedy. That's not exactly the most hilarious jokes now. I mean, I don't feel like that movie even holds up as great as it might have been when it first came out.
Yeah, I was thinking Abby Normal
right.
during this, but I have to remind myself I've also seen Young Frankenstein more than Frankenstein. So
yeah.
It is from that. It's not from Mary Shelley, but it is from Universal. But yes, you talk about timing, Stuart, and we're dealing with a movie that is an hour and 48 minutes long, which isn't a hugely long movie. It's about the same length as those television movies, because again, they had far less commercials back then than they had now. But yet, this movie, Zombies, feels interminably long. And I do, like Brock said, blame this opening where we're being introduced to all of these characters separately and having this plot of Lily Munster wants to get married, is dating, is going out with Nosferatu, who loves his rats, kind of the way I love my dogs. I guess I wouldn't be good on the dating scene these days because I'd be like, would you like to see pictures of my Frenchie?
Count Orlok.
So I'm glad you guys said that word because I can't say that word. Nosferatu? Is that how we say it?
Nosferatu.
I can't say that word. But I did get the reference.
Max Schreck.
All right, let's talk about failure. Let's talk about real failure. Yes, Herman Munster this time is an idiot. He gets assembled in the lab and, you know, does goofy pratfalls. And, you know, he has the brain of a vaudevillian stand-up comedian, or maybe it's Lenny Bruce. I'm not sure what exactly Zombie's reference is. But he tells corny dad jokes, and that's the Herman Munster we're going to get. Fine, I can accept that. Sherry Moon Zombie is nobody's conception of Lily Munster. This is a devastatingly bad casting choice that he should divorce her based on the dailies. Like, this is, you cannot be in my movie, you're this bad, when she's trying to do these impersonations of Yvonne DiCarlo.
Love is a wonderful thing, isn't it? When you can just not even see a person's flaws because you love them so much. I have to believe that there is no love in this world like Rob Zombie's love for Sherry Moon Zombie, because he must look at these things and think, she's such a genius. Look at what she's doing with this role. When in fact, I see her signaling everything she's doing. She's constantly showing on her face her concentration to impersonate DiCarlo's mannerisms and keep those arms up like DiCarlo did in the sitcom and do the body language and things. And it's not working. She's indicating all over the place.
Yeah, she got more seams than Frankenstein.
She absolutely is indicating everything she's doing. And also her line readings are all the same. She says every line with the same kind of cadence. Maybe she switches back and forth from two different kinds, but you really get the same intonations over and over and over again, to the point where it kind of isn't even a character. It's just unfulfilled. Now, look-wise, I don't have a problem the way she looks in the makeup, in the costumes, with the hair. I don't have a problem with that part. It's when she opens her mouth and speaks is when the whole thing falls apart for me, for her as this character.
Yeah, casting Sherry Moon Zombie isn't the worst idea in the world. Not firing her is the worst idea in the world. Like, clearly, once she showed up on set and started to do this performance, you would pull her aside and say, honey, it's not working. You got to go. We're going to call anybody else. Maybe we'll call Uma Thurman. How meta would that be?
Yeah, this is where I think, A, lack of budget, and B, getting somebody like a Kevin Smith or a Rob Zombie, they're just going to use who they know instead of who's good. Imagine if Rob Zombie made this movie, but Universal put down a stipulation. You can't work with anybody you've ever worked with before. You have to go out and cast this movie and not just look at your friends and say, which one of my friends would be a good Herman Munster? Which one of my friends would be a good Dr. Frankenstein?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because at the end of the movie, there are 4 casting directors listed. And I said to myself, for what? Where did they use 4 casting directors? Is it on set for extras? What were they possibly casting for? Because everybody here who speaks a line seems to have come from a different Rob Zombie movie.
They're probably just friends. They're quote-unquote casting directors that are just like hanging out. It always feels like Rob Zombie wants to just hang out with his friends and maybe a movie happens. That has been my problem with all of his work, is how aimless and non-directed his directorial efforts are.
Yeah, let's remember, House of 1,000 Corpses, probably my still favorite movie of his, came together in editing. It was a mess in what was filmed and trying to follow the script, and they saved that with years in the editing room. But I wonder if some of those casting directors, this was filmed in Romania. It had been put on hold due to COVID, but it was shot earlier this year in Romania. And they did have Romanians in here with speaking parts. And so some of that, I remember him talking on an aimless commentary that he was trying to find Romanians who didn't sound like Dracula when speaking English. And while we're talking about him hanging out on the set with his friends, if you want to have that feeling that you're hanging out on the set with Rob Zombie, buy the Blu-ray of this, which has the worst bonus feature that I can think of in memory. It's a 1-hour making of the Munsters, so it's almost as long as the damn movie.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody says anything. It's an hour of B-roll. It is literally watching them film.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And you watched that?
I did, because I'm the Munsters researcher for this show and the Munster fan. And so I watched it, hoping at some point somebody would sit down and say to the camera what their inspiration was, what they were drawing from, what they were having problems with, you know, that kind of insight. It was just an hour of B-roll and makeup tests and all of this montage through the 30-some-odd-day shoot. And so you can just see what was going on set and how Zombie, he films multi-camera and tries to run and gun it. And if you've seen makings of real movies, you really get the feeling of how low budget this is when you get to watch all this B-roll.
Yeah, yeah, right. For lots of reasons, nobody else is going to work with Rob Zombie. So he does try to make these people that are not natural fits for the characters work. And Sherry Moon is, again, the story of this movie is Lily and Herman falling in love. You can't make that movie with her. You can't. It doesn't work.
No, it really is a hard sell. I actually liked the Nosferatu character best with her. I loved his dance moves with the "if the tomb's rockin', don't come a-knockin'." That's probably my favorite gag in the whole thing is Nosferatu, which is Richard Brake again.
Yeah, I noticed a lot of people played multiple roles under latex.
They couldn't get enough people to travel to Romania because of COVID. And Rob Zombie literally said on the commentary, he decided if it's good enough for Dr. Strangelove to have Peter Sellers play multiple roles, that good enough for him on the Munsters.
Oh, that man is so defensive, so self-conscious about all his choices.
Daniel Roebuck clearly was the Good Morning America or whatever the host guy as well as playing Grandpa. He was watching himself on the screen.
The worst dual casting. And I'm sorry, I'm not picking on her. Is Sherry Moon Zombie as the newscaster?
Oh, I thought that was Dee Wallace.
No, Dee Wallace has a voiceover cameo in this, but with the big 1970s glasses and the blonde hair, talking about the death of the genius physicist. Yeah, that was Sherry Moon.
Oh.
And it was honestly a painful, painful bit with her having some false buck teeth in her mouth and those giant glasses and Rob Zombie deciding to try to make her as ugly as possible.
Arnie, you missed it. She's doing Gilda Radner doing Barbara Walters from the early 1970s SNL. It's Baba Wawa. That's what she was doing without the little bit of a lisp. She looks like that character. Look at Gilda Radner on YouTube. It's exactly the same look with the same kind of feathered hair stuff. That's what she was doing there. But I will go back to a positive. You mentioned a moment ago.
Nosferatu.
Yes, thank you. I'm avoiding the word, dude.
Orlok. Just call him Count Orlok.
Count Orlok. They had alive dead girls. Live dead girls in the background. That's a throwaway joke.
From Zombie's own song, Living Dead Girl.
There you go. I don't care. I don't know that. But in this situation, in a neon sign, that made me laugh. There's a place in Seattle I saw years and years ago that said it was for a club like that. And it said 100 pretty girls and two ugly ones. It's right there on the billboard.
Yeah, deja vu.
Yeah, it's acknowledging the silliness of it. And as to Stewart's point earlier, with comedy being about throwing a lot of gags out there, that was one he didn't like linger on. But with the tomb come a rock and don't is a, whatever that joke was, it was so overly done. He lingered on it so much and he presented it with the guy, Count Orlok, there you go, Stewart, presenting with his hands that to me it didn't work as well. If you had it there and you noticed it, the gag could have worked stronger. But as we've talked about on countless number of Rob Zombie shows now, well, actually five, he lingers way too long on gags or horror bits. That was my big complaint on the one of the Halloween movies, I remember.
Yeah, the first one.
Yeah, 4 minutes to beat someone. I mean, again, he just can't get enough of anything. And again, it really, being director is, that's a bad role for you. If you don't know what we should be focused on, you shouldn't be directing. You shouldn't be writing either, because I feel like if this is a love story, if this is a zom-com in which Frankenstein falls in love with a vampire and starts a family, you're going to spend a lot of time with meet-cutes and having them court each other, and Rob Zombie turns it into a music video set to Sonny and Cher. Like, he can't. Partly because Sherry Moon can't do it, and then he can't write it, we can't have a romantic comedy. It just ends up just being this gag, you know, of them running around in 60s attire.
Yeah, I actually will give this film a compliment. I like what Rob Zombie came up with for Herman's arc. He's supposed to be the smartest, best man on Earth, this modern-day Prometheus, and he gets the wrong brain put in him. So then he goes and joins like a punk band where the lyrics are all his bad stand-up jokes.
I
kind of enjoyed them using bad stand-up jokes as lyrics in between punk metal being played there. And then that's where Sherry sees him on TV, and she becomes almost like a groupie, which I think Zombie may be able to identify with.
Yeah, she is his groupie. Again, it's not surprisingly, this is the story of Rob Zombie being transposed onto this. That's great, but why can't Rob Zombie tell his own story? Why does it go from this awkward slamming the door, she likes me, to like a music video? Again, you have to be able to write scenes about people falling in love, and he doesn't understand drama, and she doesn't understand acting and comedy. So you have, I think, everybody else doing a competent job. I actually feel like Jeff Daniel Phillips, while not doing the conception of the character I would have in mind, if he's supposed to be Fred Gwynn, it's not quite right. But he's actually pretty good with his comic timing. The Count Orlok's pretty good. They're trying to, the supporting players are trying to help these two make a fucking movie, but they can't get out of their own way. Like, in the end, these people's lack of talent is going to thwart all the supporting players.
Now, I like Daniel Roebuck usually. He's very competent about what he's been working for absolutely forever. Him and Bruce McGill and a whole bunch of actors like that are good standbys to go to when you have a nice smaller role to go to. And I have no problem with him typically. And here, he's doing what Sherry Moon is doing. He's playing everything the same way. And he's trying to put his own spin on Grandpa. But the issue I have for him here, he's nowhere near as charming or likable as Al Lewis. Now, obviously, Al Lewis is a tough act to follow. I completely understand that, especially with all these years of me knowing that character. But if you're coming to this character for the first time, you're not getting anything off of his character except curmudgeon. And it's constant, 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 which is a shame. He looks good. I like the new makeup for Grandpa. I also like the new makeup for Herman. I just don't like his choice of playing him with one note the whole time.
It doesn't help that he actively is here to dislike the character we're all here to like best.
Right.
Yeah, that doesn't make him endearing, but it could be explainable if you write it that way. I just never understand. There's something about an awkward dinner where they meet. Does he think that this guy's too dumb or not rich enough for his daughter? You know, he wants him to be with Orlok because then they'll be financially set. You got to be smart enough to make this concept play. And unfortunately, yeah, this grandpa, I don't think they ever call him grandpa, the count.
No, because he's not a grandfather yet.
Yeah, right. But the count, he should be the scene stealer that has us all like feeling like it's his movie. And instead, I always want him out of the picture. He's never an asset because he's not Al Lewis and because this character isn't helpful or even a big enough problem to be standing between them. They end up still getting married, even though he goes to a spell book and tries to stop it. Like, nothing he does seems to really matter. You could actually have the movie without it.
There's actually a moment at the very end where he and Herman get along, and I was hoping that would be what they were have the relationship for the movie, because that one moment when the two of them work off each other and they're getting along and they're agreeing with each other, there was an electricity, there was a spark of fun in that conversation when they're sitting on that couch at the very end of the movie that was missing from their interactions the entire time. And if you know anything about the Munsters, which I was reminded of when I watched Munster Go Home, their relationship, it sparks every time they talk on the screen in the original rendition.
Gwyn and Lewis, yeah.
Yeah, totally.
I agree. I think these two, if given the chance, could have been as good as Gwyn and Lewis. But because of how this origin story is presented, then, You know what would have been an interesting way to go about this is, I guess, kind of like the movie IQ, if you want to make a rom-com.
Too deep. People don't know it.
And well, they can go back and look at it then. Is you could have had Grandpa trying to get these two together. And then you could have had Grandpa and Herman have more time together as they're trying to show Sherry Moon that this is the guy for you. You don't have to go looking for some rich Nosferatu. And then we could have had more scenes of them colluding and playing off each other like they did in all of the sitcoms, instead of having Grandpa in this antagonistic role, which really doesn't work. There's not really a good antagonist in here. We also have this brother of Lily, Lester, from the TV show. He came in, there was a werewolf uncle, Lester, but he owes money to a loan shark and has to try to steal his father's castle to pay that off, and the loan shark is Grandpa's ex-wife. There's just all of this convolution, but none of it really feels like it's standing in the way of the main plot of the love story.
Yes, this is exactly what I'm talking about with Rob Zombie not understanding writing. You're absolutely right. The conflict in a romantic comedy is always, how do we get these two together? There's no problem there, ever. She loves him the second she sees him because he has a flat forehead, and he loves her the second he sees her because
it's written that way.
She's Sherry Moon Zombie. Yes. I don't know what's lovable about her, but we're to go with that. And that is a problem for a romantic comedy. You have to have a reason why they're kept apart, why they turn on each other at some point. You've got to be willing to explore those dynamics. And the best they can do is Herman gets tricked on his wedding day of selling off the castle to a fortune teller, the ex-wife of the count. And that means nothing. They don't try to get it back. They just have to go to America and be stars.
Yeah, the villains win. They get the castle. They keep the castle. And nobody tries to stop them.
Yeah, this really needed to be workshop. Someone needed to sit down with Zombie and be like, I know that you got the passion to know these deep cut characters like Lester.
And Tin Can Man, who is...
Yeah, okay, I figured that had to be from the show.
Yeah, it's Eddie Munster built a robot in one of the episodes, and it was Tin Can Man. And under that outfit is the original Eddie Munster, Butch Patrick.
Is Marilyn here as well? I know most of the original cast is dead.
Marilyn is only able to make it as a voiceover on the airplane as they're flying to America.
Okay. I was looking for callbacks.
So, yes, all the surviving monsters are in here.
Okay. Yeah. All right. So that was your callback to Eddie. But it just makes no sense. It's like a deep cut that, like, all right, a robot's marrying them, but I don't know why. You have to have all of Rob Zombie's knowledge. He's not explaining his love to a generation that doesn't know the show. And that is why he needed a co-writer on this badly.
Were you guys distracted by Lester's ADR as much as I was? Because obviously when he was speaking in the mask, you couldn't understand him. But it's like the volume was too high when the ADR was applied to his moments. Because I couldn't stop thinking about how it was. It could have been the same actor's voice. I have no idea. But it certainly played like a Darth Vader thing, that it was overly amplified whenever he spoke. And I found it very distracting.
Now, we can talk about the technical aspects. I will say it doesn't look as bad as that first trailer made me think it was going to look.
Agreed.
It is a low-budget production, and it is not up to theatrical release. They were correct in dumping this the way that they did.
I'd be pissed if I paid $12 for this.
Yeah. But I can go with the psychedelic day-glow kind of color scheme that's happening here. I think that that's not a bad way of trying to make this cartoonish and fun. It's just the actors aren't matching it.
Now, wait a second. So clearly he was going for, because they have no money and because it's the 1960s, the masks of the werewolf, of the creature from the Black Lagoon, they all look like masks. They really look like masks. So Count Orlok, the Dracula guy, the...
Nosferatu.
He looked like he had makeup on and he looked good. And the grandpa and Herman with actual makeup, right? But everybody else was wearing obvious masks, which I thought was clearly a choice he was making when he had the backgrounds with the hearts and the flowers and the psychedelic stuff from the 60s and an obvious like callback stuff. That was all aesthetic choices. Though, if you're going to go with that, and they tried in grandpa's library where grandpa spends most of the time in this library with really bad green lighting all the time, and the graveyard too, they looked too obvious like sets. So where he was clearly showing us that he was going for a different kind of aesthetic, in certain moments, he even went too far there in that it didn't play well. So the masks, I got that joke, but I did not like how he lit a lot of the sets that he made and therefore took me out of the moment of he's going for kitschy. And that's a shame because I liked what he was doing aesthetically overall. And just sometimes I think he did a Rob Zombie. He went too far with it.
Too artificial. Yeah, maybe. But I would say for the most part, my complaints about this movie are not that it's too low budget. They have the budget to make this artificial fake Tim Burton world kind of work. That's not a holdup for me ever. So yes, is some ADR work bad? Is there a shot or two with too much green lighting? Okay, but that's not it. What's it is that this is a romantic comedy with no chemistry between the leads because you've cast Sherry Moon Zombie.
What I will give this film, though, is Zombie swings for the fences sometimes. And I think it almost works. Like when they are reanimating Herman and they do the shots of Floop and the doctor with the lightning bolts behind them, or when Sherry Moon first sees Herman and they do the shot where her background is all these spinning hearts. I actually think that kind of works. I think that that kind of cartoonish visual aesthetic complements this film.
It made me think of Creepshow. They did that a lot in the Stephen King, George Romero movie.
Yeah, they did, didn't they?
They do it a couple other times, too, like when they go to Hollywood and they have, they're clearly in a stationary car and the background is moving. And again, it's an aesthetic choice.
Oh, that one I hate. And all of a sudden, cartoons are roaming around them and all of that.
They're a stationary car, and there's all sorts of cartoony things going on in the background with Hollywood there. It's a choice that he made that did not work for me.
No, that one didn't.
Because he went too far with it, again. So, also, at that point in the movie, it was way over an hour already, and I'm tired of watching the movie. So, again, his choices may have been right. If he was able to cut this down 20 minutes also, I may not have minded so much that he was going for all of these different choices because things didn't gel to me. It was too many different disparate things that made me question why we have bad masks and bad ADR versus intentional stuff like that car moment.
I agree with you completely, but when you say this movie, you're tired of watching it. It did pick up the pace when Herman and Lily got together. It's like a totally separate movie, and it takes like 40 minutes for them to get together.
Yes.
But once you get those two together, there's at least a momentum to it. It feels like they finally raised anchor. Like they'd been dragging the anchor for 40 minutes. They finally realized what was causing them to be slow, and it goes faster. But I'll agree with you, it's painful still. None of the jokes are hitting for me. And what I realized is kind of what you were saying earlier, Brock, is that on the show, Herman wasn't stupid. He was also incredibly well-intentioned in that original series. He would go out of his way to help people. And that was also the case in all of those reboots and movies I watched, is he was well-intentioned, and here he feels not intentioned. Like, the only intention is to be with Sherry Moon, and that's all of it goes. He has no aspirations, there's nobody he's trying to help except himself get Sherry Moon, and so it takes a lot of the heart that I feel is the Munsters away from this movie.
Again, what we're talking about is a lack of writing. Is that I feel like the actor is game and is okay, but like he's got nothing to do. These people have nothing to do. There are two montages of them falling in love. There's the montage where they vacation in the Devil's Island, and then they honeymoon in Paris. We don't need all of that. If it's just there for bits to make jokes about mimes, then cut it. We don't need jokes about mimes. We need relationship. We need drama. We need things to happen. The only thing that happens in Paris is that they get Spot, which is the monster from the sitcom that lives under the stairs.
This probably will completely validate everything you're saying, but in the commentary, Stuart, Rob Zombie kept talking about floating scenes he would write. And I wasn't quite familiar with that term, but he kept saying, this was a floating scene, and this was another floating scene. And finally, I realized what he's talking about is he had ideas for scenes that didn't really fit in the narrative, and he would film them and then figure out in editing where to put them. And it seems like a lot of them, this could have been streamlined if he just stuck to the scenes he wrote that actually worked to develop narrative instead of these one-off scenes that aren't even funny.
Right, right. That's the other part.
He fell in love with the concept, but they didn't work all that well, and that's what he's inserting when, like, you see in one of the montages, Uncle Gil is back, the creature from the Black Lagoon, and they're watching a movie together. And things like that is just scenes he wrote that would be like, this would be great in the movie. We'll figure out where to put it later.
Yeah, floating feels like one way of describing it. I mean, I would say inertia. Like, you have all these moments of these actors standing around going, so what should we be doing? I think they literally say that at one point once they get in the house. They're like, so now what? There's this general sense of no momentum happening, and you're just kind of floating through these, kind of very lame gags where, okay, so because Herman saw something called the House of Zombo, which looks like a Rob Zombie music video from the 90s, he says, if that guy can make it, I can make it, and they're just moving to LA. I feel like that should be more motivated, but okay. But like, yeah, there's this all this stuff given to the joke of the neighborhood not understanding that they're not wearing Halloween costumes. This thing takes forever. This is the climax of the movie, and it takes forever.
I shouldn't be worried about this, but if the whole thing was they are out on the street because they lost the castle, how do they have the money just to go to LA with no job and buy a big house? I mean, it makes no sense. There just should be something there. They're going to make a big deal over Herman needs to get a job, but yet they somehow had the money for this house.
Well, this house is free.
Right. The house is free because she can't get rid of it. And that was the joke. So the real estate agent they run into, played by Cassandra Peterson, who I thought was Dee Wallace at first until I looked it up afterwards. Cassandra Peterson is known for Elvira. It's nice that she was cast here. And she is in her first scene is not wearing makeup. In the second one, she has this really nice, elaborate witch's outfit mask on. So therefore, she confuses the Munsters, I guess. Well, not really confuses. The Munsters love that she looks that way because it's Halloween. They never heard of the concept of Halloween. And so hilarity ensues, and she basically gives them the disgusting house on the street that she cannot get rid of. And all of that played for me just fine. That moment, that little montage, that little scene, the whole thing with the real estate agent getting the house, that 5 minutes, whatever that was, played completely fine for me. The fact that they went on to this major Halloween party afterwards and everyone in the streets, we found our people, could have been about 5 or 10 minutes shorter. But those moments of the movie, the most fun I had watching this movie was these monsters playing with and interacting with people they think are just like them. Thank goodness we found our people. I liked the intention there. That played like a Monsters episode to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was the premise joke. Yeah, you know, was the idea that there they were in the middle of suburbia, living the way that they do. And how did that come to be? And here, it's just overly convenient. Again, you want drama. You want obstacles to come in their path that make it hard for them to achieve what it is that they want. As Arnie has pointed out, they somehow can just hop a Transylvania Air flight and just get it, move in, realize they don't like the neighbors the next day when they're not wearing all their Halloween costumes. And then Lester just shows up with a bunch of money and we go, okay, and that's it.
From Vegas. Of all things. Not even a good reason. Not even like a fun, like a grave robbing and I came upon this money. Something more realistic, right? To the group.
Something that was set up.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's anticlimactic and then there's just not having an ending. And this really falls into the latter part.
Yeah.
It's just like, we're just stopping now. We've shown you how they got the house, how they got the pet, how they got everything. Done. Peace out. Drop the mic. It's about setting things up and creating amusing obstacles that make us like these characters more in their struggle. That's what drama is.
Exactly. The ending of this movie, when they get a windfall of money, could have easily been explained. If you tie it to the fortune teller in some way, because that's what Lester was tied into earlier in the movie, that's all you had to do. This out-of-the-blue Vegas thing is just that. It's out-of-the-blue and does not go along with this movie at all.
Yeah. It confirms that Rob Zombie has never cared about why things happen. He just loves his puerile jokes. But we do get the sitcom they do, and just to underline how ill-equipped all these actors are to step into the shoes of the original sitcom actors, they actually restage the opening credits as the finale, and we see Herman go through the door, and Lily, whatever you want to call that waggling as she holds her hands out.
That's what she was doing, the original Lily Munster, going through the door.
Because no, I know. Yeah, convincingly, there.
And Grandpa with the shovel couldn't go through the bit. I enjoyed that more than I enjoyed most of this movie. I really did. I liked that they went there. I liked that it was in black and white. I liked that they restaged it. I liked they played the theme. And I said, monsters today in my head.
It was the trailer.
It was the trailer? Okay. I didn't watch the trailer.
It made a lot of people confused. Is this movie in black and white? What is this movie? I can't say this tells you a whole lot about the movie as a trailer.
But I enjoyed watching that. And that's more than I can say for the majority of this movie. So, Stuart, Arnie, do you recommend Rob Zombie's The Munsters? Stuart.
All right. So, first of all, I just want to say I'm so glad that The Munsters theme doesn't have lyrics, because what I got to say, my singing voice isn't up to equipped to say it.
This movie really sucks and it's bad. Not recommend, not recommend, not recommend.
Boom, ba-dum, boom, ba-dum.
You know what? I'm going to be kinder. It wasn't nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be an abomination. You say Rob Zombie and Munsters, and that just sounds like a caustic, toxic chemical reaction that will kill everyone who puts their eyes on it. And it's not that bad. It really, it demonstrates one talent that Rob Zombie has, and that is imitation. He knows how things should look. He lives in the world of recreating heavy metal album covers, and that's why his grindhouse movies have the appeal that they do, even though when you watch them, they're kind of like, well, this is shit, not scary. Here, he understands that this is Munster Go Home. I'm going to capture that Dayglow Technicolor gloom from the 60s movie and transpose it here. And visually, technically, this could have worked if you had Zombie good at any other facet of directing. If he had been able to write the love story, if he had been able to direct the actors, if he understood comic timing and knew that at the very least it can't be an hour and 48 minutes if you have no plot, you could have survived, and this could have gotten over that line of being like mildly diverting and cute. Again, I'll stand by Jeff Daniel Phillips as being an acceptable Herman. Roebuck, I don't know, he's no Al Lewis, he's not a help. Sherry Moon is the reason why it's a red arrow. But also, you know, again, I want to remind you, I recommended Addams Family Reunion because I like Tim Curry. Sherry just had to be as bad as Daryl Hannah, okay? Just be as bad as Daryl Hannah was in that Addams Family movie. And I'll give you a pass. She's so much worse. I can't do it because of her and because this thing is way over long and really not very funny. So that's a pretty flat not recommend. But not the worst Rob Zombie movie by any stretch.
Arnie.
I can agree with not the worst Rob Zombie movie. But I'm not going to be as kind to this film as you are. What got me is I'm sitting here. And I had sat through a lot of Munsters. I immersed myself in the Munsters TV show and reboots and reunions and all of this Munster stuff. And some of it I'd recommend and some of it I wouldn't. But none of it was bad. And so I sat here and I watched this movie and I said, why am I not enjoying this? What is it about this that makes it so much different than the other Munsters films? And it's not Rob Zombie's aesthetic. That's not what's bothering me. And Sherry Moon is bothering me quite a bit.
She should.
But that alone is not enough to make me not enjoy watching this movie at all. And that's when I hit it, is they built this Frankenstein's monster out of parts that were laying around Rob Zombie's friends, but they forgot to put in his heart. There was no heart to this movie at all. There's no characters to root for. There's no plot to go for, but there's nothing to make me like these monsters, which I did in every other incarnation. Even the Scary Little Christmas one had heart, and this doesn't. I found myself completely detached from this, and by the time an hour and 48 minutes was up, my not caring turned into actual bitterness. It went from apathy to anger. And yeah, some of the actors wouldn't be bad with a better script. You're right, it all comes down on Zombie. Zombie is the auteur here. Zombie must take the blame for his bad casting choices as well as the credit for a few good ones. I like Richard Brake and everything, but it's a really solid not recommend. It is not a good movie, and truthfully, it's the worst Munsters thing I've watched, and I've watched a lot of Munsters.
I agree with both of you with all of what you guys said. I don't have as big a problem with this movie as Arnie did. I'm with more like Stuart. I liked and understood what he was trying to do with the aesthetics. So I was able to go along with the masks. And I was able to go along with the sets looking like sets. And clearly he was going for a 60s TV vibe in this. I also agree with Arnie, though, that it just wasn't working. There was no charm. There was no heart. I kind of like that when you have a reimagining of classic characters or known characters, that you don't do the exact same thing. We talked about this in the Addams Family, whereas John Astin's version of Gomez is different than Raul Julia's, but you like both of them. And Jeff Daniel Phillips, the way Herman's written is not well done, but I have no problem with his take on it, given what he was given to work with. It makes some sense. I don't like what Daniel Roebuck did with Grandpa because there was not even an aspect of likability there because it was so underwritten and he was unable to make it something better. So yeah, it's not as bad as I thought it was going to be. It's just way too long and I wasn't enjoying myself at all. There was a couple of gags I liked and that's great. There was one late in the movie, Knock 'Em Dead, always good to double check. That's a fun joke, but that's the kind of joke he would make in House of a Thousand Corpses or even The Devil's Rejects and those kind of death jokes, which are fun and were too fleeting. If Rob Zombie actually put in more of his grotesque stuff, this might have been more enjoyable. If it was more of a Rob Zombie take, I mean, I'm not sure if I would like that either, but I would have enjoyed that more. He swung really hard for something here, but the material that he wrote for himself did not sustain it. And it's a not recommend for sure, but it's nowhere near as bad as I was thinking it was going to be. But let's be very clear, it's bad.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, it's solidly not good. But given that I thought I was going to watch something worse than the Addams Family Halloween special, it clears that bar. It's not the absolute travesty that I expected. So on that, you're winning in that respect. I think you guys both really nailed it by calling out the lack of heart. I want to just add that I think that that has been Rob Zombie's problem in all of his films. He has never shown or presented a sympathetic character in any movie. He has no compassion. And so at its weirdest that he's doing this sitcom. That's where you really notice the lack of it. But it was also true in his Halloween. It's also true in all of his. You always wonder, why should we be following these assholes?
If you really want to watch a fun Munsters movie, I suggest watch Munsters Go Home if you can find it. It's worth seeing if you enjoy any aspect of the Munsters or are curious at all about what made the Munsters a property that keeps coming back decade after decade. I'm sure you can find it somewhere. Definitely check that out and see if you do like the Munsters in its original iteration. And it's 90 minutes, and you would think, how can a sitcom be stretched out? Well, they found a way to make a 90-minute plot with these characters. There is a way to do it. They did it then in 1966, folks. It's possible.
Better than Batman 66. I'm going to take that controversial stance.
No, I agree with you completely. Batman 66 drags a lot. It's a lot of fun, but it drags. Whereas this Munsters movie, not once did I feel this could have been shorter. And it's 90 minutes of sitcom stuff.
Okay, so we're done with the Munsters, even though I suppose there's room for a sequel. They could. Obviously, it's about having the kids, right? It would be about how they got Marilyn, how they had Eddie.
Aren't you shocked that this didn't end with a pregnancy announcement like the first Addams Family movie? Like, they'd set up everything else. It felt like the last thing to set up, like a great stinger to end on, is there's a baby coming and we know it's Eddie.
Yeah, it seems like what you would tease if you thought there was a chance in hell of you getting another one. And I think we all realize that this is being pitched out and they'll reboot this. No doubt Munsters will come back, but, you know, Rob Zombie was lucky to get a Halloween 2. You know, usually you do one Rob Zombie and you're done. No more. No more of that shit.
So if it's decade by decade, sometime in the 2030s, we'll get a new Munsters then.
Yeah. Or maybe sooner. Who knows? A new series seems like the more obvious choice, but I don't know. I do know that we are getting a new take on Hellraiser after so many years, and that's what we're covering next Friday.
Cannot wait. I may be setting myself up for disappointment, but cannot wait.
Straight to Hulu would have anyone pause, but we've seen good examples of that. Predator, just going to put it out there. Doesn't mean anything, and the trailer is... The movie's at least well-funded and has a real director, so I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to actually being able to see images on the screen as opposed to some of those underdeveloped Hellraiser sequels. And then we'll be getting to those last two animated Addams Family movies just to polish it out. If you're wondering what we're going to do for November patrons, something totally different, something that may be all heart, or maybe it is a little bit cynical as well. Robert Altman's Shortcuts will be our November patron pick. It was selected by one of you. It is probably one of the most influential movies you may never have seen. It came out in the early 90s and brought 24 name brand actors together to tell an intermingling story in Los Angeles. Influenced everything from Magnolia to The Crash, and I would argue does it the best.
And thank you for being a Now Playing patron from month to month. You guys are the lifeblood that keeps our heart beating. I love you more than Lily loves Herman.
And I also want to thank you patrons for keeping us going and allowing us to come into your homes week after week, much like the Munsters did for so many years. So next time, gotta boogie.
Okay, we're done here. Enjoy your Scorpion Father.
Thank you to all the listeners who have backed us through our crowdfunding campaign, and we hope you've enjoyed this special bonus movie review podcast.
You've made me the happiest ghoul in the world.
Help us spread the word about this show by leaving a 5-star review on Stitcher, Podbean, iTunes, or your podcast store of choice.
Can someone please call 911?
The opinions expressed on Now Playing are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the opinion of Venganza Media Incorporated.
Simply dropping ice cold facts.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with the motion pictures reviewed or otherwise referred to herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders. They are included here for the purpose of review and no infringement is intended.
This is a bunch of cornball hooey. Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of Venganza Media Incorporated and may not be used without the expressed written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2022, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Well, it was so nice to meet you, and I hope to see you again soon.
Over my dead body.
That would be delightful.
Do 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 do. Okay, and we're done. So
Monsters reboot.
Sorry, I'm laughing. I just started thinking about the Halloween special and how awful it was. The Cousin Shy song, all of it. Just I'm crying.
And I agree with you, Stuart. I was a monster.
No. I found Jeff Daniels. Jeff Daniel Phil is three first names.
I can't say that word. Incarnation.